Welcome to the ClearAdmit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, March 15th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good, thank you, Graham.
So I noticed that you managed to get vaccinated over the last week, so that's good news.
Yes, very excited. Got my first jab on Wednesday, so I'm onwards and upwards. Have my second jab scheduled for sometime in May. So yeah, no, that's very good.
Yeah, that'll help. So we have a lot to cover this week because last week was the beginning of what we call our kind of decision weeks for, you know, the round two. And so there were some schools like UNC and Tepper and others giving decisions out. But then this week looks to be really crazy, right? We start to get into it with even more programs. So do you want to just give us a take on what's been happening and what we can expect this week?
Yeah, funny you should ask, Graham, because I forgot to check what the schedule looks like this week. But I'm pretty sure Ross is one of the bigger hitters this week that's going to be rolling out decisions. And yeah, there'll be several other schools along the way.
I looked it up.
Well, I'll let you then take the lead here, Graham.
So, you're absolutely right, though. Ross is one of them. And then we have Darden, Chicago Booth. Duke has a decision date this week, and then INSEAD and Georgetown as well. And there may be others that I'm forgetting, but those are the main ones that come to mind and that I'd seen on the list earlier today. So, so it's a busy, busy week.
Yeah. And that this is exciting times. I mean, certainly on Livewire, the site gets super, super busy. And, you know, we just wish everybody the best of luck. If they've gotten the interview, now they're waiting for the final decision. Hopefully they only need one good result and so forth. But there are a lot of anxious folks right now, but certainly over the next, this week, next week, and even into the week after, a lot of these decisions will be rolled out and people will know where they're going to be heading come the fall.
Yeah. So speaking of wishing everybody luck, this week is St. Patrick's Day, if my calendar is right here. So I did something fun. I took a peek, and I can't take credit for this. It's actually Alex Kelly on our team who mentioned, you know, St. Patrick's Day and that maybe we should look into some of the luckiest candidates that we've seen this year. And so I just took a peek at Decision Wire. And I was kind of curious to see if anyone had really hit a home run, you know, this year. And I found a few candidates that I just wanted to share their kind of profile because it's pretty interesting. We have, so candidate number one here is someone who they applied to Dartmouth, Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton, so aiming very high, and they were admitted to all four schools. They, you know, were going to start school in the fall and they had a background in consumer goods. The GMAT was a 760, kind of off the charts stuff there, and they had a 3.6 GPA. So that's certainly a lucky individual, and they indicate that they think they're going to go off to Stanford. We have another one. GMAT score was 750, GPA 3.9. This person's an entrepreneur, and they had applied to Booth, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, and they too ran the table and even got money from Wharton. And they don't know where they're going yet, but you know, that person's out of New York City. So a couple of candidates with a lot of luck. There was a third one that I found who, again, GMAT 760, GPA 3.7. And this person got into Columbia, Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton. Again, just crazy stuff. You know, we don't see very often people running the table with what we call the trilogy in Harvard, Stanford, Wharton. So I just thought it'd be interesting in this week where we talk a little bit about luck and wishing people luck to highlight some people who really have some impressive results under their belt. And those are all round one candidates. So don't jump out of your chair if you're a round two candidate wondering why this person knows. They all were from the first round. So there you have it.
I just want to clarify, these are super lucky people, but probably it wasn't luck that dictated their opportunities.
Right. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And, you know, I think you could take a fantastic candidate with all the right bells and whistles who may not get into all three schools. So there's always a little bit of it, you know, a little bit of it is left to chance. But I think, yeah, people make their own opportunities too. And you know, these individuals obviously are accomplished and probably had some amazing stories to tell in their file. Let's see, a few other housekeeping items, and then I know we're going to talk a little bit about a new thing we're doing. So the first thing is that we have a Tuck Chat coming up. It's going to just take place in the Tuck Chat Room on the website, and that's on Monday, March 22nd. It's at noon Eastern. And I think the admissions team from Tuck is going to be leading that. So that should be fun. If you're interested in applying to Tuck in round three, or, you know, planning an application for next season, this is the place to be. So check that out. You can sign up on our website. You do have to register. And then you obviously head over to the chat room on the 22nd. The other thing is that we did do a few pieces on the site that I wanted to call people's attention to. We did a great International Women's Day piece about INSEAD and some of their really well established alums who've gone on to do amazing things. So these are women who you know, have made some impressive strides in the business world that INSEAD wanted to highlight. We also did a short piece on a fellowship that's been created to honor Black excellence at Ross at Michigan. So that's kind of a cool thing. And the last thing we did was a story about the Johnson Tech MBA and how several startups that have come out of that program are addressing COVID. So that was a really cool, very topical piece that I encourage people to check out. But Alex, I did want to give you a chance to talk about our new initiative here with respect to Clubhouse. So do you want to just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, we're experimenting at this stage, but we're trying to figure out how best to use the Clubhouse platform to sort of continue to share our conversations and our insights in terms of the MBA admissions process and so on and so forth, just like we do it through this podcast and do it on the site more directly and so on and so forth. So what we've done thus far, for those of you that are on Clubhouse, try to find Graham, try to find myself, let's all follow each other and stuff like that. But also we've set up a club on Clubhouse, MBA admissions. So if you do the search for MBA admissions, you should find the club. It'd be great for you to join the club. We've set up our first of event that we're hosting, which will be a week on Thursday at 4 p.m. British time, whatever that time is. I set it up, so I apologize, everybody else. If you're not on British time, you're in trouble.
It's at noon. It's at noon Eastern because of the U.S. will have already changed clocks. So it's okay. Going to be at noon Eastern, yeah, on the 25th, yeah.
Very good. Yeah, very good. And you know, we'll run that event. We've never done it before. I imagine it'll be quite light running a podcast, so Graham and I will chat about stuff, what's going on at that point. But then we'll be able to invite the audience to ask questions directly. So it'll be more interactive than a podcast. So I'm really excited to see how it goes, Graham. I'm still in two minds about Clubhouse generally. I've enjoyed some of the conversations I've participated. We talked before we came on air about some of that. Like, for instance, yesterday I was in a room that was talking about some AI and machine learning stuff that was really on point and really super interesting. But I do think there is quite a few events on Clubhouse where people are just thumping their chest trying to tell each other how super smart they are and so on and so forth. So yeah. So there's a, you know, you've got to distinguish between the wheat and the chaff and so forth. But I love it. I've learned a lot in some of the rooms that I've been in. And I'm really hoping that it becomes an interesting forum for folks seeking out more admissions advice that are targeting top tier students. And if that's the case, hopefully we'll be there and hopefully we'll be able to provide some really good insight over there. So yeah, it's exciting stuff, Graham. We'll see how it goes. And I encourage anyone listening that's on Clubhouse to seek us out, seek out the MBA Admissions Club, and let's see how it all develops.
Yeah, and you're going to have to give me a lesson. I've been using it a little bit, but now I'm thinking about how does one moderate a forum or a club or, you know, whatever we're calling it. So it'll be fun, but yeah, I'll have to get up to speed a little. But I'm looking forward to just connecting with you as we do every week, but also with, you know, what's cool is this ability for people to tune in and interact with us live, right? Yeah. So that's going to be fun. Yeah, yeah. Stay tuned for that. One other thing, we got a review. Again, I think some people listening probably are like, oh no, here they go again with the reviews. But we did get one, and it came from somebody named Local Foreigner. And the title of the review was Great Information. And they say, I am not actually an MBA candidate, but my son is. And I was interested in finding out what an applicant to a top MBA program needed to accomplish to be successful at that level. I had no idea. Clear Admit answered all my questions and then some. What a great informational podcast. I also enjoyed listening to the interaction between Graham and Alex. Keep up the great work. So that was really wonderful to receive that review, especially from someone who's, you know, not a direct player in the kind of admissions process. They're kind of, you know, trying to help their son. So really appreciate that review, and thanks to that person for writing it. As always, you can reach out to Alex and I simply by sending an email to info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps, and that'll get our attention. And we have been getting some emails with, you know, questions about candidacies and things. So lots of fun. I try to write back to those immediately. Sometimes it takes me a day or so, but yeah, so lots going on. Alex, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about this week before we get into our candidates? And I did want to mention, you picked out some really interesting ones this week, and actually you went a little off script in terms of, you know, you picked a live wire candidate instead of decision wire and apply wire too. So I'm looking forward to it, but is there anything else on your mind?
No, let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. So this actually is just an entry that we received on Livewire from a candidate who was waitlisted at Columbia Business School. They indicate that they took the GRE and had a 323. Obviously, they applied in the regular round, which for Columbia is a rolling admissions round. So the decisions just come out as they get through the files. This person's an international candidate, and they didn't share what they want to do post-MBA, or well, they ticked the other box, so I don't know exactly what they want to do. But they did mention that they left a nice note in which they said, "Not gonna lie, being waitlisted has been tough, and I initially felt pretty defeated. But this soon passed, and I'm lucky that the door is still open at my dream school. As an international applicant, I'm realistic about my prospects of being accepted from the waitlist, and my best chance is probably to reapply next year. But does anyone have any waitlist advice? I don't have the best grades or the perfect profile, but I know I can contribute a lot to CBS. P.S. Feedback was submitted on the 19th of February, and they were waitlisted on the 5th of March. So I think when they say feedback submitted, they mean the feedback from their interview. So literally a couple weeks after the interviewer filed their report, this person found out they were waitlisted. So Alex, what do you make of this, and what made you pick out a Livewire entry to talk about?
Honestly, I thought it would be good to have a broader conversation about the waitlist, because we're seeing more and more folks getting waitlisted. And, you know, this person has a sort of common, situation with the waitlist. So it just gives an opportunity to address some of the issues. And Columbia is always a one that I sort of enjoy discussing, because they have this early decision round. They're the only M7 school that does this, which always used to annoy me when I was at Wharton. So they're sort of changing the playing field, the rules of the game a little bit in terms of competing. So they have early decision and they have the regular decision. And quite frankly, for this candidate, this is where there's a big bit of a hiccup here. They claim in the notes that Columbia is their dream school, but they didn't apply early decision. If Columbia is your dream school, you apply early decision. I mean, clearly there might be reasons, mitigating circumstance, where they couldn't apply early decision. But if I'm ADCOM at Columbia and you come in regular decision, you've signaled to me, intentionally or not, but you've signaled to me that we are not your dream school. Now, if it's Wharton or Harvard or Stanford or other M7 programs, if you apply in January, i.e. the round two, which is sort of similar to regular decision for Columbia, then it doesn't matter, because you've not telegraphed to me at Wharton that you're not a dream school. But in Columbia's case, you have, because you've made a deliberate decision to apply regular decision versus early decision. So
right.
I know I go on and on about this, Graham, and I know sometimes it might whatever, but it to me that's the issue here. And then sort of more broadly, when you get waitlisted at schools, and again, this isn't necessarily directly for this candidate, but this is waitlist sort of advice 101. There are two broad reasons why you get waitlisted. One is you're not quite good enough, i.e. you know, they've made an assessment on your candidacy and you fall just behind the folks that they've admitted, right? And that's what most people think the waitlist is for. You're just not quite there yet. And the waitlist gives you a chance to potentially improve aspects of your candidacy and then and for you to show the admissions committee that you are good enough, and then they could admit you, right? So you can be proactive and to change that dynamic a little bit. The second reason why you might be waitlisted is a little bit murkier and definitely a little bit less whatever. But the school might not be convinced that you really want to go there or you've really done the research to understand why the school is a good fit for you. So if that's the case, and this is where we get into this discussion of why did you apply rolling decision instead of early decision in the case of Columbia. If that's the case, then your waitlist strategy has to be to convince the ADCOM that if admitted, you will come. And not just to say that, but to show why, right? So demonstrate why this is a great fit for you. Anyone on the waitlist or any ADCOM that's looking at waitlist candidates, they do not want to admit anyone off the waitlist who is not going to attend. That's got to be very clear. In this particular person's situation, you know, their GRE score that they've shown is probably below average for Columbia. So maybe there's a chance to improve that. Someone's weighed in to say maybe they should take the EA. I don't know if that's necessarily the right move in that regard, but they have to potentially, on the one hand, improve their profile, but certainly show, demonstrate why Columbia is their dream school.
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, I now understand absolutely why you've picked this one out. I mean, I think as we get into these decision weeks and all these, you know, candidates are going to find out whether they're in or out, there are going to be a lot of people who are waitlisted. There probably are a handful that are already waitlisted in the first round who will, like, remain on a waitlist. So this is super topical. The one thing I would add is, you know, you got to understand the rules of the game if you're waitlisted. And what I mean by that is, you know, in the case of Columbia, I believe that they often use like a waitlist manager where you literally will connect with someone on the admissions team who says, hey, you're on the waitlist, keep us abreast of any developments to your candidacy and we'll keep looking at it. And so there's sort of this proactive, very transparent. I remember, you know, some candidates have told me that Columbia's like told them like, hey, you're on the waitlist and here are a couple of things that we, you know, we kind of, that gave us pause. It might be a test score, it might be this or that. So you can be very proactive and then, you know, keep your waitlist manager up to date. But there are other schools like say Harvard who have a kind of closed door policy on adding to your file after the fact. And so I would only add in terms of why schools waitlist, I think in the case of an HBS, it might be that yes, you fall just shy of the mark of those types of candidates who are getting in, but if for some reason Harvard doesn't yield in enough candidates, they like to have a small list of people they can go to who are, you know, almost as good, if not just as good as the people that they ended up, you know, making the decision around, or maybe they need to fill a gap. If you're from an overrepresented, you know, bucket or something, there are ways that they use the wait list. But in the case of HBS, you know, you can't really do much to get off. It's just sort of at their discretion. But most schools are more in the Columbia category where you're on the wait list, you can submit an update, you get a promotion at work, you take a new test, you complete HBS core or whatever it is, you can let a school know.
Graham, there's a very good reason for that, right? So, I mean, if folks think really logically and clinically about this, Harvard and Stanford are at the top of the heap. Wharton's right up there too, but Harvard and Stanford are at the top of the heap. So if Harvard has you on the wait list, they pretty much know that if they admit you, you will come. So they can be a lot firmer about wait list rules at the very top of the heap. If you're further down the M7 or top 16 school, you really want, you know, the folks that you've put on the wait list because you're not quite sure whether they truly want to come, if they turn around to you and say, absolutely, I want to be in Philadelphia, and these are the reasons why, and my wife works in Philly, like, if, or my husband or whatever. So if you can put a compelling case together at that point that absolutely you want to go to Wharton, even though it's quite clear that you would be admissible at Harvard or Stanford or whatever, then you know, make that case, and Wharton's gonna listen to that,
yeah,
more readily. I mean, I hate to pick on Wharton because I'm a huge fan of Wharton and worked at Wharton for many years, but you can, you know, but the point is, you know, a school in the top 16 versus a school right at the top of the heap is going to be much more flexible about the folks that they've waitlisted. That can come back to them and one, convinced that they will attend if admitted, and two, shore up any potential weaker aspect of their candidacy.
Yeah, and I wish this candidate had shared a little bit more, because we might have been able to offer more guidance. So, for example, like, you know, this 323 on the GRE is definitely going to be below average at a place like Columbia, and so boosting that score would be a natural step to take if you were on the wait list and seeking to gain admission. I don't necessarily agree with the idea that you go off and take the executive assessment. I think that seems like too blatant of a backdoor attempt to be like, hey, here, you can throw out the GRE score and just take me on the EA, since no one pays attention to the EA averages at a school. It's not like published in all the rankings and stuff. So I think that's a bit of a backdoor that may or may not work, whereas improving the GRE right out of the gate, that could help. I'd want to know, though, more about this candidate's background. Like, is this an Indian male engineer or something? Like, then it's like, okay, you're in an overrepresented group. You really got to take some steps to stand out, and that means probably get an above average test score, et cetera, right? So, and in any event, I do wish this person the best of luck. I know it's hard to be on the wait list, and, you know, I don't know what prompted them to apply rolling admissions to CBS, like you were kind of talking about earlier, but, you know, it could be that they applied to, you know, some other schools in round one, it didn't work out, and then they pivoted to CBS. But obviously, if CBS is their dream school, then you wonder why it wasn't there in the beginning, right?
That's my point. It's hard to make an argument for a dream
school. Well, it's their dream school. It's their dream school after getting rejected in round one from schools that were above it or something, right?
Yeah.
In any event, thanks for picking that one out. Let's move on, unless you had anything else you wanted to say about the waitlist stuff.
No, that's perfect. And we will be talking about the waitlist more so over the next couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll get into it. I'm absolutely certain. All right, so this is Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is an MBA ApplyWire entry, and it's a person who's going to be applying next fall and starting in the fall of 2022. She is looking at Berkeley, Cambridge, Harvard, London Business School, Kellogg, and Toronto Rotman. And she's been working as a marketing manager for a professional hockey team. And post-MBA, she's interested in sports or maybe entertainment. I presume in the kind of managerial domain within that sector. Her GPA is a 3.84. She has 3.5 years of work experience, and her GMAT score, which she's going to be retaking, she had a bit of a snafu taking it at home, is a 580, and that's not what she anticipates getting when she takes it again. She's located in Canada, in Winnipeg, so we could probably maybe take some guesses as to which hockey team she's affiliated to. But in any event, she mentioned she's going to take the GMAT again. She's regularly been scoring 690 in practice, and that there was a technical issue when she took the test the first time round. So that's the profile. We did glean from her post that she went to a kind of decent, but, you know, kind of middle of the road school in the United States for undergraduate, despite being Canadian, and that she graduated at the top of her class with 2 degrees in marketing and communications while playing Division I hockey and acting as the vice president of her sorority. So, Alex, I think I did okay. I did not say ice hockey. You told me that Canadians hate it when you say ice hockey. I tried to say hockey the whole time there, but what do you make of this candidacy?
I only say that because when I worked up in Toronto for a couple of years, I was corrected when I said, oh, we're going to go watch some ice hockey. they would look at me quizzically like, that's just not the language we use.
Got it.
But yeah, no, quite frankly, Graham, I think I love this candidate. If she gets the right GMAT score, i.e. in that sort of, well, I'd say 700 up, let's really push for that score. You've got someone, I don't care that she didn't go to an Ivy League school. She's got a 3.84 GPA. She graduates top of the class. She also plays Division One athletics or Division One hockey and is also the vice president of her sorority. I mean, what didn't this person do during undergrad? And you can only assume that she's continued to do really interesting and impactful things in her work. Because so you're not someone that's super busy on campus doing lots of really interesting stuff whilst also graduating top of your class and then go and work and not be a top line worker, right? So she's working, she's a marketing manager for a professional hockey team. That's interesting in of itself. Assume that she can show real impact in that role, and so on and so forth. Very hard for me, Graham, honestly, to find weak points here, other than obviously the GMAT, which they're a mitigating circumstance, tech issues. So really, you know, concentrate hard, get the score that she merits, and then really look at the school selection that she has. I'm not quite sure we really can understand how she's selected schools. You know, a couple of schools in the UK, a school in Canada, school on the West Coast, school on the East Coast, and also Kellogg and so forth. I mean, these are all very good schools, but maybe there needs a bit more strategy in terms of where she ultimately ends up applying.
Yeah.
Even I can imagine, you know, she aces the GMAT. She writes a really strong, powerful, what means most to me and why first essay at Stanford. Why not? I mean, well, I think she might even have Stanford listed. I don't know. Maybe she doesn't. But anyway, super, super interesting person, I think, Graham.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think, so first of all, with respect to her GMAT, we all know about technical issues. In fact, you and I almost couldn't record this episode because I made the mistake of trying to update my system. And so, you know, it sounds like something went horrifically wrong on the test. And so she's taken it again. She's been scoring 690 in the practices. And so I would just encourage her to really push. She's got time. So I wouldn't rush out and take the test again until she really feels comfortable. But otherwise, like, I'm with you. I think what an interesting profile. We don't see that many people coming from the kind of professional sports domain. And yet it's, you know, it's a respected domain. It's actually, you know, you think about, so like Wharton actually has a whole sports marketing class that they do. And there are a number of schools that have some strength in this domain. And so I would play that if I were her.
Yeah.
Meaning I would almost recommend, you know, yeah, you could do sports or entertainment as she's listed here, but I would almost just like play it straight up and just say, look, I've been working in marketing for a professional hockey team. I want to stay in this domain of kind of sports and, you know, that, and just kind of maybe work her way up to this kind of CMO role or even, you know, a president of operations or something at a professional sports league or club, sorry. So I think there's a lot of opportunity and it would be an interesting story to tell. And I know you don't like baseball, but you know, there are many now general managers and baseball folks who've...
I thought you said focus on sports, Graham.
Oh, man. Well, in any event, yeah, there are a bunch of MBAs kind of lurking in the, you know, front offices of Major League Baseball teams. And so,
yeah
there's got to be... I think there's a compelling story here. And I agree with you. You know, maybe she didn't go to a top-ranked undergrad, but she, you know, performed incredibly well while playing a Division One sport and as you said, leading the sorority. And so clearly an active person. I think there's a lot to like here. I would just really buckle down and, you know, go hard after a good GMAT score because that not only will open up doors at top schools, it'll also open up scholarship dollars potentially. So I think there's a lot. I like this candidate. I think everyone would love to have somebody from a professional hockey team, like in their class, you know, talking about what it's like to market a professional sports franchise. I mean, that's really interesting stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And maybe even if she's got an interest in esports, that might be something to look at too, because that's obviously becoming a huge, huge area in this domain.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. So I, you know, wish this person the best of luck. Hopefully she'll stay tuned to our podcast even after she gets that fantastic test score. And I do agree with you, though. One final point is that I would look at this school list again and think about how it maps to not only her qualifications, like maybe she could go up a rank or two in terms of where she aims, but also the kind of career stuff. So like I mentioned sports marketing at Wharton, there are other schools too, but you know, that's not on her list. And like you said, Stanford's not on her list. So there could be schools that she should be considering that aren't here. And I also think she just needs to think carefully about, you know, she's got schools in the UK, schools in the US, there's one in Canada. She really needs to think this through, because it'd be a lot easier if she knew kind of roughly where she wanted to land post MBA, and that could help her set a course, right? So, but she has time. So,
and what sport, right? Because if it's football, Graham, she's got to come to the UK, because she can't be running a soccer league in,
yeah, I know,
and so forth. But anyway, very good. Shouldn't go off piece there. Let's move on.
Yeah, all right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire entry that you've selected, and this person applied to just 2 schools, Indiana Kelly and UNC Kenyon Flagler, and they got into both. Kelly has offered them a scholarship of $10,000. They don't have any money coming from UNC. They're going to start school this fall, and they want to work in consulting. And they'd love to work at Accenture, Bain, BCG, Ernst & Young, McKinsey. Those are the companies on their list. They had a 3.68 undergraduate GPA, and they are located in Raleigh, North Carolina, so literally down the road from Kenyon Flagler. And they note, currently living in North Carolina, but thinking of moving back to Chicago. I can't decide which program would set me up more for consulting at MBB or any consulting firm. They're both great programs. Does it even matter? If not, another big concern is the cost, which would make Indiana the best fit. So, Alex, what kind of advice would you give this person?
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, and we talked about this before we came on air, MBB is doable, but it's going to be a stretch for both these programs. But certainly MBB at local offices, that might work out well. But consulting generally, I think both these programs are really good fits for what they want to do. And you know, depending on exactly where they want to be, might well determine in this case that Indiana Kelly is a pretty good option if they want to go back or return and be more access to the Chicago marketplace. Then they went on to talk about Houston as another area that might be interesting to them. And if that's the case, then maybe Kenyon Flagler, probably in a tier above Indiana Kelly, if we want to be perfectly honest. And because they're in a tier above, would provide them just more geographic flexibility, right? So I certainly think if you know exactly what geography you want to be in post-MBA, you can absolutely make a strong case for a school that may be considered a tier lower if that school has a strong presence in that geographic area that you're focused on. But if this person is sort of thinking, well, I'd quite like to return to Chicago, but I have interests in other geographic areas, Houston being one of them, that then makes the case potentially for Kenyon Flagler in my book. The reality is this person will get access to consulting opportunities at either of these programs. I'm not sure the financial difference between the two, the $10,000 scholarship and so forth, should be a determining factor, because consulting is generally considered a high-paying outcome for these programs. But nevertheless, I could go either way, Graham, but I think I've laid out the reasons why I'd choose one over the other. And it's all about that longer term flexibility. If you know you want to be in Chicago, you can make a strong case for Kelly.
Yeah, this is an interesting case. And I think the first thing you pointed out that I want to just underline is that, you know, McKinsey, Bain, and BCG typically have a group of like focus schools where they spend a lot of time on those campuses and try to get a lot of candidates. And, you know, neither of these programs are in that group of focus schools, but they do place some students at McKinsey, Bain, and BCG. It's just not to the extent that you see at Harvard or something, right? So there's going to be a little bit of a, they'll have to work at it, right, to get into MBB from one of these programs. Another thing that jumped out at me, and this is kind of an argument in favor of either of these programs, but with UNC, they have this very well-noted consulting concentration or track that you can pursue as an MBA. And employers love it. I mean, the consulting firms love it because it literally is like a kind of like a training ground to get you up to speed to be a really great consultant. So that is something that does appeal about UNC, Keenan Flagler. You also point out they often do rank a little bit higher. This person's already in the area. So there might be some arguments to go for it, especially if they're thinking they might want to go to Houston or, you know, Chicago, having that flexibility. On the other side, though, I think Kelly's a great program. And in fact, we had their head of career services, Eric Johnson, on the podcast not so long ago. And they if there were a ranking for like career services offices and across top MBA programs, they would be right at the front of the pack. I mean, they have a great career services function. It's not at all rubber stamped. It's really personalized. And so because of that, you know, you might say, wow, you know, going to Kelly and all the connections that Kelly has in the Midwest are, you know, just really hard to beat. So this is a tough call. I mean, if this person said Chicago or bust, and I'm incredibly worried about money, then, you know, they should just go to Indiana. It's probably cheaper to live there as well. But as you point out, if they're going to be a consultant, whether they're at Bain or Accenture, they're going to make good money. And in fact, if they intern for the summer and then return, they might even be able to get the company to pay for their second year of business school or help pay off their loans. So I think it's dangerous to weigh the funding too heavily here, especially when we're only talking about a $10,000 scholarship. So this is tricky. I mean, I would just encourage this candidate to get to know both programs and think a little bit about fit as well, because I don't think they're going to go wrong at either campus. And so I would attend welcome events and virtual, whatever they're doing, and try to figure out where they think they'd be most comfortable, because they can achieve their goals out of either school.
Yeah, fair. I think that's a great assessment.
Yeah. So, well, I guess we've kind of, we've somehow managed to zip through more than a half an hour of discussion on our candidates this week. But Alex, it's a pleasure as always. And I guess we'll be back in a week's time, and we're really starting to hit hard with the deadline. So there's going to be a lot of news and a lot of activity. As always, you can hang out with fellow candidates at clearadmit.com in the chat rooms as you wait for news and just want to have others to kind of be miserable with as you're kind of, you know, nervous and waiting. So head over to the site if you need company. And don't forget to follow us over on Clubhouse as we develop our presence over there. And I guess we'll see everybody in 1 week's time. Thanks, Alex.
Great. Thanks, Graham. Good luck, everyone. Stay safe.